Well, as we've been mentioning throughout the course of the show, Claire Walsh, a free diver from Leixlip, has just brought out her brand new book called Underwater. And I'm delighted to say that Claire joins us on the line now. Good morning, Claire, and thanks for taking our call.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be on.
I have the book in front of me here, and I've been reading it for the last week since we got it sent in to us here at KFM. And if we just look at the first couple of words that you have in the prologue, it says, "Underwater, you don't hear anything. Putting my face in the water is like a sigh of relief for my mind. Internal chatter, judgments and criticism fade to a white noise, and the rhythmic anchor of my breathing through the snorkel lulls me into the welcomed quietness." Tell us first of all what you do, what it is you do as a free diver.
So freediving is the sport of holding your breath underwater. And what I'm describing there in that passage is preparing for a dive. So when I talk about freediving, I'm usually referring to the depth. So that's, if you want to imagine, lying on the surface of the water, taking a deep breath, holding it and going down as deep as you can and back up all on one breath. So what I'm talking about there is preparing to do that. So I'm lying on the surface of the water. I have my snorkel in my mouth. I'm breathing. I'm calming my mind. I'm quietening all those chattering thoughts, noise that usually are going about my head at a rapid pace. Mm. But in the water, things are so much quieter. And I think that's the skill that I've learned to take with me on land, to quieten things down and just enjoy the peace and quiet, essentially.
Yeah, and I love the front cover of the book as well, the fantastic photograph, and it also says how holding my breath taught me how to live, which I think is a great line. But tell us how you actually get involved in free diving. So was it something that you were interested from a young age, or did you
Not at all. The book kind of covers a journey of travelling I did in my early 30s, and somewhere along the way I experienced freediving. So in the book, I described seeing freediving for the first time. Now, I didn't know what I was looking at. I was in the Galapagos. I was on a snorkeling trip. I've always loved the water. That's somewhere I've always been, you know, comfortable. I'm relatively competent and confident in it. So I do tend to go towards water sports and activities. So on this trip, I was snorkeling, lying in the water, and below me, I saw one of my friends kick down. He lived in the Galapagos. He kicked down and he pulled himself down using a rock and started playing peekaboo with nurse sharks that were lying underneath. It was honestly the coolest thing I had ever seen. I remember so very clearly thinking to myself, this is the closest thing I will see to a merman. And what I realized was, what I didn't realize was that I was seeing this sport called freediving, this activity that I had no idea existed. I just thought, I need to learn more about this. I want to know how to do that.
Yeah, because I was interested to find out, you know, because obviously, as we said, you're from Leixlip, so you're not going to go free diving in the River Rye. But so you went over to the Galapagos. How long ago was that?
It started in 2015. So like I said, I was travelling. After that trip, I went over to Utila, which is an island off Honduras. And that's when I did my beginner's freediving course. But I returned to Leixlip shortly afterwards. And I thought it would be one of those things that I would leave behind. You know, I'd have really cool memories and beautiful pictures, but ultimately I'd go back to my day-to-day life. But freediving was just that little bit different. I think that's what I described throughout my story. It's how little events in my life reminded me of freediving, gave me the urge to go back, to return, and to go back to those skills. And like what I say at the start of the book, that quietness, that peace underwater.
Mm, and I'm looking at some of the photographs here as well, and I see the seals in the Galapagos as well, and some other fantastic photos that are taken underwater. But there's one here of you holding the tricolour, And it's in 2017 where you get your first national record. So how does it go from something that you see in the Galapagos Islands of, you know, that's fascinating, to then competing and breaking national records?
That's a really good question. Firstly, that picture is a really, really special one. It's something that I hold quite dear to my heart. So I've learned freediving. I kept on returning. I wanted to learn more. I became an instructor. And then I had an opportunity to work in the Freediving World Championships in 2017. So I saw what a competition looks like. And that just blew my mind. Suddenly, I started meeting freedivers who were, you know, the top of the sport, elite freedivers. So, you know, diving for yourself, whether it's, you know, with seals or along a reef or training on a buoy, that's one thing. Diving in a competition is something very different. So at the end of 2017, I was in Dahab in Egypt, and I thought to myself, I'm going to give this a go. I'm just going to see. So I did my first competition dive, and I was lucky enough to set my first national record. And that photograph was taken just as soon as I came out of the water. And I think anyone who sees it, you can't deny, I am absolutely thrilled with life in that photo. So it really encapsulates the joy that I felt at the time.
What was the national record then that you broke? So how long? It's all kind of on how long you can hold your breath, isn't it?
No, so that one is depth. That's as far down as you can go.
Right.
If I'm being 100% honest, I can't actually remember what that first record was.
Right.
And there has been a few since. The Irish records would have been, and I suppose still are to an extent, relatively shallow.
Yeah.
In terms of world freediving, but then at the same time, you know, we have to start somewhere, and certainly since maybe 2019, there's lots more people learning freediving and more starting to compete. So those records are going to get deeper and deeper and deeper. And I just think it's terrific. We're such a small country, but we are putting ourselves on the map for freediving, which is something I feel really passionately about.
Okay, can I ask a question that maybe people are thinking in their heads at the moment? Is it dangerous? And what are the conditions like? So when you're talking about going deeper and deeper, I'm assuming it gets colder and colder the further down you go. And how long do you have to hold your breath for?
So, to answer your first question, yes, of course, it's dangerous. You know, you are holding your breath underwater. There is an inherent risk. But there is so many other factors that balance that out. And I think, you know, to do freediving, you have to play by the rules. And the primary rule is never dive alone. I cannot emphasize that enough. There are rules to keep ourselves safe. We calculate risks. We dive with people we trust. So that is something, you know, that you can control to an extent. But obviously you're in the sea, and the sea is the variable. It's never the same from day to day. So when you're going down, yes, it does get colder. But I think you're thinking of Irish waters. So yeah, we're obviously really cold here. Usually where these competitions are held, you know, the water is, it could be up to 31, 32 degrees on the surface. It is warm. I actually, swimming in the sea here, day in, day out, I find that temperature too warm. So when you're going down, it might, of course, there's a temperature drop. But it's, you know, you're in a wetsuit and it's not the same discomfort as it would be going a couple of metres down in the Irish Sea, that's for sure.
And in terms of the length of time you have to hold your breath for?
It really depends on the dive. I'm a particularly slow diver, so when I'm diving to depth, it's usually about 3 minutes.
Right.
But my breath hold is just under 6 minutes.
Wow. How do you train for that?
In lots of different ways. And again, like this book is about freediving, but it is more so about the structure and the discipline that freediving has given me. And, you know, that could be anything for other people. That could be running, that could be gardening, it could even be reading. So, you know, the practices and learning freediving are about structure, discipline, things that I can do at home. So for me, I do a lot of breath work. I practice my breath hold training. I do focus on the mental side of things. So I use practices like meditation or journaling, stuff to make sure that your body and mind are working together.
Okay, and this book, was it always something that you wanted to do when you got into free diving, was to write a book, or did it kind of just spring up?
No, of course not. It would have been, I suppose, a pipe dream.
Yeah.
I think, yes, I like talking about free diving, and I like sharing those experiences. It's a sport I feel so passionately about, and I want others to learn about it. But more so, I wanted to share my journey with mental illness, simply because I think it's something that other people can and might and hopefully will relate to. And in relating to it, there's a sense of, oh my gosh, someone else feels like that. Oh my gosh, I'm not alone. And I know for myself, that can give a huge respite, a huge sense of relief, just to realise that, you know, there's a shared experience, that you aren't so isolated. So in terms of wanting to write this book about freediving, I think freediving naturally became interwoven into the story that I think I always wanted to tell.
Absolutely. It's not, and that's a good point as well, and to point that out, that it's not just about freediving. It's a personal story, and you are very open in it and honest, which is, you know, refreshing to read. There's some difficult moments in there that you mention, and some of the chapters, the likes of fear, and but then you come back in with a chapter called I'm Okay. So it is a journey, really, from when you're younger through your 20s, 30s, and to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel really strongly about, you know, I call it, you know, lifting the curtain, this idea of, you know, the Wizard of Oz, and it's actually just a small man behind the curtain. It's very easy to portray one image, and certainly I have done really extraordinary and exciting things. I've been to really cool places. You know, I worked as a puppeteer, have gone free diving, but actually when you lift that curtain, it's just an array of the normal human experiences. With plenty of anxiety, self-doubt, imposter syndrome. And for me, you know, being honest about how I overcome them, hopefully that's something that other people, you know, will take from it. And at the time, or at lots of different points throughout my life, I've needed that little nudge to get through that, I suppose, initial stage of fear or self-doubt. And I do have a small hope that maybe this book will be a little nudge for someone else who just wants to move their life in a different direction, or even forward, however slowly.
Okay, well, we have 4 copies of the book to give away on the show this morning. If you want to be in with a chance of winning a copy of Claire Walsh's book, Underwater, all you have to do is just text or WhatsApp the words underwater and send that to 0833 97 97 97. Before I let you go, Claire, I know you, the book came out, was it yesterday?
The book came out yesterday. It was so exciting.
Yeah, I'd imagine. But you're launching it in Maynooth next week.
I am so excited to be going to Maynooth next Tuesday. I know there's lots of family and friends coming, but anyone who's in the area, they are more than welcome. And if you're looking for information on it, you can find me on Instagram at Claire Walsh Law.
Did we lose Claire at the very last minute? Are you still with us, Claire?
I am indeed, yeah.
You just broke up a little bit there. Go with the Instagram again.
At Claire Walsh Life, or my website, clairewalshlife.com, has all the information you'll need.
Clairewalshlife.com and on Instagram as well. Listen, it's been great talking to you.
Thank
again.
You so much.
Continued success, and hopefully the launch and everything goes well in Maynooth. It's a fascinating book. That is Claire Walsh, who is a free diver from Leixlip. That new book, Underwater, is out now. And I have to say, I really enjoyed reading it. I wouldn't have known much about free diving. You don't have to know a whole lot about free diving to read it, but the discipline in it and the stories that she tells are fascinating. Being able to hold your breath for 6 minutes, and also some of the stories that she goes through. As I say, 4 copies to give away on the show today. All you have to do is text or WhatsApp the word underwater. Send that to 0833 97 97 97, as well as your name and where you're from. We'll be announcing the 4 winners before 11 o'clock this morning, and we'll have those copies here at KFM for collection. So get texting. Thanks, Claire.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
And you're very welcome back. As you will have heard and perhaps have read over the last 24 hours, primary pupils from third class and up will be learning a modern foreign language from September 2025. That's under a radical restructuring of the curriculum. It's among the major changes to the primary education being rolled out in the 2025-2026 school year in the biggest shake-up in 25 years. Joining me on the line is Catherine Donnelly, Education Editor with the Irish Independent. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Owen.
As I said, this is the biggest shake-up in 25 years. It's been called for the last number of years. Some would say it's well overdue, but here we are now and we have this to look forward to.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's 6 years in the making. That's how long it's taken to sort of look at, you know, what best practice might be and what our 4 to 12-year-olds needed to equip them for life in the 21st century. Because children born today, our children who are 4 or 5 or 6 now or who are born today, will be around probably into the 22nd century. So they need to be learning skills that will carry them through all the changes ahead. And we've seen, like in recent years, you know, the number, you know, we've seen technological change in recent years. And so it's important that from the very early stages, children are equipped to deal with all that life throws up at them.
As I said in the introduction, and kind of one thing that's been making the headlines is the fact that students will learn a modern foreign language from September 2025, but that's only one facet of this restructuring.
Well, it is, but it's long overdue, I suppose. But what's happening is the whole approach to the primary education is changing. Structures are changing. We're moving away from rigidities around, you know, starting junior infants and doing, I don't know, maths, Irish, English, whatever, you know, in rigid subjects into broader thematic kind of subject areas, you know, that would kind of recognises the connectedness between all areas of learning. So for certainly from junior infants up to second class now, there'll be 5 broad areas. There'll be language, and that's obviously for those junior classes will be Irish and English, and then the modern foreign language will kick in then in third class. There's another one called arts education, and that will cover, you know, a broad spectrum of anything that might be considered arts education. It could be, you know, painting as as much as probably it amounted to in my day, but you know, it could be drama. So the scope there for music, you know, the scope there for a lot of teaching and learning. And again, when those children move into third class, there'll be greater differentiation, if you like. We'll move out of the broader thematic approach, and, you know, there'll be more defined subject areas. So then you might have drama as a subject or music as a subject. You know what I mean? It's as they get older, the subjects, the more defined subjects will sort of come into play. So we had language, we've arts education. There is another one called sort of, it's the STEM, the science, technology, engineering, maths education, and again that will, for the junior classes, that will cover that very broad spectrum in an age appropriate way. Social and environmental education, which will kind of cover things like history and geography, and then as you move into the senior classes, they will become more history and more geography. You know, they'll be kind of, there'll be greater delineation. And then there's well-being, and well-being covers a lot of stuff around just making children confident and happy.
Absolutely. Addition to those 5 areas, school can also have a belief or religious program in accordance with the school ethos, although the time for faith formation is going to be reduced. Is that right?
That's right. They can. Well, in fact, the patrons have a legal right to deliver their own program in schools. So that's there, and that's not being interfered with. But the time allowed for it is being reduced by about a half an hour a week. So it's not a huge cut. But along with that, there'll also be time for, so that'll be down to 2 hours a week rather than 2.5 hours a week. So, but along with that, there'll also be time for every week for a broader ethical multi-belief values education program that isn't, you know, to do with faith formation. And by the way, importantly then, as well as all of that, the restructuring is also creating a next about between 5 and 7 hours a month in what they're calling flexible time. And in that time, schools, it'll be up to individual schools to decide how they want to use that time. And by the way, if a school did want to use some of that time for their own religious program, that's up to them. And that'll vary between schools. But it is giving schools a level of flexibility that they haven't had before. So in the junior classes, it'll be 5 hours a week and going up to 7 hours a week for the third, fourth, fifth and sixth classes. Or a month, sorry. 5 hours a month and 7 hours a month, yeah. So it's so that's flexible time. So that's a very new thing, and I think that would be welcomed by schools and to allow schools use that time to meet the needs of their own pupils, because you know no two schools are exactly the same, and you know they have different needs and different they all operate in different contexts. So you know a school in inner city Dublin might decide that they need that time for one area, you know, for one area of learning, and the school in rural Clare might decide they need it for something else. So,
It's one of the things that stands out for me is that flexibility in this new curriculum. And I know as well that the children themselves will have a greater say in how they learn, so they can bring ideas forward. And it kind of strikes me maybe that they're bringing the primary curriculum a little bit more in line with the secondary curriculum in order to make that transition a little bit easier for students in, say, fourth, fifth and sixth class, preparing them then to go into first, second and third year.
Well, exactly. Yes, exactly. I mean, we've also had big changes in preschool education and in the very early years of school. There's a big focus now on play-based learning, and the play-based learning, I mean, children learn, but they learn in a playful sort of a way, and that's seen as really important because that really involves the children in their own, you know, in their own learning, and you know, they're learning through playing, learning through doing. And so this is bringing that a step further. And then, as you say, we have seen changes in junior cycle. So this will kind of provide a bit of continuity now into the changes that have occurred in junior cycle, where children, you know, have a little bit more independence around their learning. Yeah. And, the way the system is trying to move away from a system that's entirely focused on, you know, memorising for exams and trying to get children, you know, pupils to reflect as they go and to understand what they're learning and then to have a bit of agency themselves about how they want to develop that learning.
What about homework then, Catherine? This is something that's kind of popped up time and time again. It hasn't really been mentioned in this curriculum, but...
Well, it does. No, the word is there. It is there. Homework is there, yeah. It's mentioned. It's mentioned once. I've seen one reference to it. Yeah, and that's in the context of, you know, the doctor makes the point that learning will sort of extend beyond the school, and parents obviously are primary educators, and parents... in Ireland, I mean, you know, parents do play a big role in supporting their children's education. And it talks about that and how a school may decide to use homework as a way of, you know, continuing the child's learning outside the home. But I think we seem to be moving away from the old-fashioned homework where you went home and you wrote out, you know, pages of tables or whatever. So I think there may be, and there's a move in the recent debate on homework has thrown ideas up. There seems to be, you know, research is showing that, you know, if you give children homework that's maybe more project-based or, you know, that's a little bit more playful, they might, you know, they might be happier to engage with it than sending them home and telling them to write out, you know, to do certain maths problems, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there does seem to be this move towards trying to find more creative ways to involve children and parents in learning outside school in a way that's sort of linked to the curriculum.
Yeah, President Michael D. Higgins, some will remember, had a call to stop homework in primary school, and students will still have to spend, as you said, Catherine, they'll still have to spend time learning at home. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar previously called for a change in the way homework is given, but didn't back the President's calls completely to stop homework.
Yeah, I think the President was much talking about the need for... children to be able to use that time creatively. So that could, see, that could take the form of homework. If the homework is creative, well, then the children, you know, are can be creative. I think it's about what is homework, what should homework look like, basically. Yeah, so I think that will become, well, that, we've had an interesting, as you say, a national debate about it, and now this is coming. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how homework evolves in the new era.
Generally speaking then, Catherine, just to finish up, has this been broadly welcomed by, say, parents' associations, teacher bodies, organisations like that? What's the response been?
Well, certainly, I think, yes, the primary school managers and the INTO have welcomed the thrust of it. I think there would be concern that enough resources and teacher training is put in to ensure that it is, that it's implemented in a meaningful way. So that is something that they will be keeping an eye on. They will say that, and understandably, that teachers will need to be upskilled, in order to, get the best out of this approach for themselves and for the pupils. I think we'll see in the teacher training colleges now, more of a focus. Obviously, they will, teachers in college at the moment or in the future will obviously be trained to this new curriculum. And I think we'll have to see a focus now in teacher training on modern languages and ensuring that we've enough teachers coming through to offer, when they go for an interview, to be able to say to the principal or the board of management, well, I can also offer French or German or Spanish, whatever it may be. So that's something, I think a lot of primary teachers would have sufficient skill set to do that teaching at primary level. But I think we'll see more of that coming through the teacher training colleges.
Okay, well, there's a great explainer on the Independence website, and I'm sure it's in the hard copies today as well, if you want to find out more about that updated primary school curriculum framework, which is going to be implemented in the 2025-2026 school year. As Catherine said, they're going to look at five broad areas from junior infants up, including language, which will be English and Irish from junior infants to second class. Then there'll be another language brought in third class, science, technology, engineering and maths, well-being, arts education and social and environmental education, which is essentially history and geography. And from third class up, there'll be more differentiation into individual subjects while also continuing an integrated approach. I'd be interested to get your views on that. Let me know, text or WhatsApp. You can also call us on 045 898 999 or email studio at kfmradio.com. But for the moment, education editor at the Irish Independent, with that, Catherine Donnelly, thanks for joining us.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, just to announce the four winners then of our competition this morning. To win a copy of the new book from Leakslip free diver Claire Walsh, Underwater. It's released yesterday. It'll be launching in Maynooth next Tuesday night. And the four winners: Aoife Campbell in Kilcock, Breda Gavigan in Athy, Maria Lee in Newbridge, and Kate Campbell in Robertstown. So well done to you. Those books are available to collect here at the KFM studio. Monday to Friday between 9 and 5 o'clock. Let's go to other sporting action then over the course of the weekend. The Kildare Hurlers and Camogie teams are both in action, so it's the small ball that's taking centre stage, and sports editor of the Leinster Leader, Tommy Callaghan, is with us. Good morning, Tommy.
Morning, Owen.
So this time around, the Hurlers are up against Kerry in St. Conlett's Park, having won all three games in the league so far, and an extended run that extends back, unbeaten run that extends back to last year. This will be a tough test though, Tommy.
Yeah, this will be the first real big test on. There was a couple of fixtures in this league that were the standout fixtures. It would have been Offaly, Kerry and Carlow, And no disrespect to the other teams in the league, but Kildare have successfully beaten them as one expected. And also they beat Carlo in their first round, which was a major boost. And up to last weekend, actually, Offaly, of course, are the favourites to win the league. Strong thereafter, being relegated, but they're on the way back again. And they would have been the strong favourites to go all the way in this league, and then followed by Kerry and possibly Kildare then, and Carlo. Carlo are not gone yet, but they need not only need to win, they need them other results to go their way. But last weekend, Offaly defeated Kerry. The last puck of the game, a sideline cut actually, and a huge win for Offaly. A bit of a drawback for Kerry, but now Kerry are coming to Newbridge tomorrow. These teams met last year down in Tralee. I think there was 8 or 10 points in it in favour of the home side. Kildare's record against Kerry wouldn't be brilliant, but this is a fine run this Kildare team is on. The hurlers are on a great run at the minute, as you said. They're unbeaten since the Christy Ring last year. Won all the Christy Ring, won the Keogh Cup, won their 3 league matches. So they're going in here with full of confidence, and I said the home game should be an advantage to them, and hopefully to get a decent crowd tomorrow.
The team has been named this morning. It is as follows: Paddy McKenna, Klein, Neilan Wienacon, Selbridge, Simon Lacey, Nace and Cormac Byrne, Aero Curraquil, that's the goalkeeper and fullbacks. Halfback line, Keane Shanahan, Klein, Ryan Boren, Nace and Conan Boren, Nace. Middle of the field, Paul Dolan, Aero Curraquil, Cahal McCabe, Maynooth. Half forwards, James Burke, Nace, Jerry Keegan, Selbridge and Paul Dively, Confey. And the full forward line, Brian Byrne, Nace, Declan Flaherty, Coyle Dove and Cahal Dowling, Nace. Very strong team, Tommy, particularly there, those six forwards that we mentioned, the likes of Cahal Dowling, Brian Byrne, James Burke, Jerry Keegan, as well as Declan Flaherty and Paul Dively.
Yeah, the big boost there for Kildare is that Paul Dively is back in the fold. Paul has been injured now for a fair while. I don't think Paul has played at all this year. Certainly hasn't played in the league anyway, and I don't recall him playing even in the Keogh Cup. So it's his first game back. If Paul is 100% fit, a huge boost to David Herity's side. He is a fine player. He's a player for the big occasion too. He definitely be short of match practice. No doubt about that. But I know he has been. He's been training hard. He has played a couple of challenge matches recently, and obviously did well enough that the management are happy to give him a start. And as you say, it's a strong team. There's a lot of scoring power there. Kildare are on top of the table in this league at the moment. On they're the same number of points as Offaly, but they have a score difference of +25, while Offaly are on +9 and Kerry just behind them on +16. So as I say, Carlo are not completely out of the equation yet, but they would have to beat Offaly at the weekend.
Okay, let's hear from Kildare hurling manager David Herity.
It's huge that we get a support out to Connells and get behind the team now the next day. They were brilliant last year when we played Carlo in that must win or must get a result match in Connells, but we need to get that back. That everyone that's, if you are a bloody hurling supporter and you're from Kildare, you simply have to be in Connells to get us a result. You have to stay on the top of your game, and that is going to be the way when you are playing Kerry and Offaly and Carlo, and that's brilliant. It's really exciting to look forward to that. Those games coming up now as well. Like I said, it's we've had obviously all the games have been very competitive so far, but this round four onwards, this is where things really ramp up. I can't wait for it.
You'll be hoping to get a big crowd into St Connolly's Park as well tomorrow, Tommy. It's a double header with the Camogie team also playing against Armagh. We'll get to that game in a moment. But with the footballers not being out and the ladies footballers not being out, it's an opportunity to go and see what's a very, very good Kildare hurling team.
Of course it is, Owen. But the one thing that I just cannot fathom is, and it was mentioned at the county board meeting on Tuesday night when the chairman asked everybody present to try and get fans to get into Newbridge and support the hurlers. But at the same time, there's matches fixed for the same afternoon, club matches, including under-16 hurling. Now, that to me, beggars belief. There's the Aldridge Cup semi-finals, not at the same time, granted, But if you're going to Newbridge for a 2 o'clock match, you will not, for instance, get to Johnstone Bridge, or you'll have a hell of a job to get to Johnstone Bridge by 4 o'clock. The other Irish Cup matches up in Salisbury, so that wouldn't be too bad. But then there's under 16 hurling league matches on as well. I just can't understand that, to be quite honest with you.
All right, okay. But also in action, as we said, is the Camogie team. They're playing Armagh at 11:30, which is a strange time, but of course they wanted to make it a doubleheader at St. Connolly's Park. Kildare at home to Armagh in the very Ireland National Camogie League Division 3A. They had a good win last time out, Tommy, against Tyrone, 7-9 to 1-9. A small squad, but it seems to be a tight-knit squad.
Yeah, very, very small squad. I mean, talking to Joe, I heard Joe on your programme last week, and he's working off a panel of 20, and I think they only brought 18 to Tyrone. So I hope they don't pick up any injuries or they'll be in terrible trouble. But anyway, Joe says they're very committed. Obviously, they're very committed. They're playing Armagh. Armagh beat Mayo last week and a big score as well, 5-12 to 2-5. So this is a vital game for the girls too, and hopefully they can get over the line. And if they make it 2-2, that'll be a huge boost to them and Joe Quaid and 20 girls that's in training at the minute.
Absolutely. Let's hear from manager Joe Quaid speaking after that win against Tyrone.
With all the turmoil, I suppose we had a panel together there. We came with 18 fit players today, and I'm proud to call them nearly my family. We came up today, we were focused, we trained hard, we trained well, and we came up as a family, a team that wanted a result, and with 18 of them contributed to the result. And to be fair, we probably left another 4 or 5 goals after us, but the girls were just absolutely outstanding from start to finish.